keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you feeling them flare. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch a scenario. My stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah, just nod your head with it. So explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it. No scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool. Hear my heartbeat beat into the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind. Oh no, it's ponderoso. Dope, so no overdose, cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some house stones. So I let the style flow down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know. We getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursuing.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio. Once again with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV. Thank you for tuning back in and joining us on this wonderful Monday evening, I guess we can say, because we all know Mondays suck, and today was particularly strange considering what was going on with the global stock markets, etc., etc., etc. We are going to have several callers on the show tonight so that we could go into, you know, what's going on with the stock market. We're also going to be joined by our longtime co-host DB Schwartz. Eventually, he's running a little bit late for the show tonight, but he'll be with us eventually. I'm also joined here by our special co-host, Jake Anderson, via remote location. How are you doing tonight, Jake?
I'm doing well, Nick. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great, man. Just, you know, absorbing this news that's been going on. A lot of strange developments today.
Yeah, you're talking about the stock market?
Yeah, that's one of the things that's been relatively strange. And we're going to go into D's Nuts as well a little bit later, which I think
we
can have some interesting insight into with you as well, because you covered that on, I believe it was a Thursday or Friday. And that story...
Yeah, one should always go into D's Nuts.
Yeah, really. You know, it's not about what, you know, D's Nuts can do for you. It's about what you can do for D's Nuts.
Right, exactly. I think Kennedy said that.
Yeah. First, let me get through some of these mandatory announcements. If anybody wants to join the conversation tonight, you can. You can call us at 718-717-8296. Try to stay on topic if you do call in. Make sure you keep your mic muted and your radio turned off while you're on the line. And we'll acknowledge you and bring you into the discussion. Then you can kind of talk about what you want to talk about, and we'll go from there. Make sure you catch UCY all times of the day, every day. Make sure you catch the Anti-Media here on UCY as well, 5 days a week, Monday through Friday, same place, same time. And you could even go listen to the archives at the UCY website, or you can find us on YouTube, UCY TV YouTube channel, and catch our old stuff there. You could also catch us on the radio tab at theantimedia.org. And, you know, don't miss our shows if you don't want to miss them. If you want to skip Mondays, I don't blame you because Mondays suck. But either way, we'll be here every week. I want to go to a caller we have here in San Diego. Steven, how are you doing tonight, man?
I'm doing good, Nick. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great. Fortunately for me, I'm not exposed to the stock market, so I'm not too worried. Then again, we all kind of get affected by it because the entire economy is kind of tied into this whole thing. Anyway, we brought you on tonight to talk a little bit about what you think is going on. I know you're licensed financial advisor, I believe. And so you know a little bit about what's going on with the stock market more than probably you, me and Jake do, because we're simply journalists that critique it all the time. You probably know a little bit more about how it works. So if you can, real quick, maybe give us a little summary about what is going on, whether, you know, with the Asian markets. I'm looking at the numbers now, and the Chinese market is down another almost 4% as we speak, because it's already reopened, because it's already Tuesday over there. But the rest of the Asian markets seem to be actually bouncing slightly back. But yesterday, Monday, or rather today for us, was a really bad day for the Asian stocks, as well as here in the U.S. stock markets. There was a lot of selling off going on. What can you tell us about it?
Yeah, the headlines look scary today. As far as over a two-day period, we've shed over 1,000 points on the Dow Jones. One thing to understand with the Dow Industrials is that's comprised entirely of 30 stocks, whereas the S&P 500 is an easy 500 stocks. The Dow is a very concentrated 30 stocks, and they recently put Apple into the Dow. That was making headlines not too long ago. As far as the Chinese stock market goes, just about a year ago, they allowed, they completely deregulated the Chinese stock market. And at that time, you can see in the chart in October, it went from about 2,200 points up to roaring up to about 4,000. And now after this 40% drop in the last 2 months, it still needs to drop another 33% to get back down to where it was last October, around the 2,100 range. So we were expecting high volatility from the Chinese markets, you know, after this went on. And high volatility is what we've gotten so far.
Yeah, that seems to be the name of the game is volatility right now. I have a stat here from China. It peaked in June, and as of since then, their stocks in China are down 38% from their June high. So that's a pretty big fall from grace, I guess you could say. To me, it seems like the whole world has been relying on the Chinese economy to kind of boost a lot of financials and try to, you know, ride the wave of momentum that the Chinese economy has been showing. Now, the sad thing is that it kind of goes to show where people's, you know, moral standards are at, because we all know China has some really horrible labor practices. They have really bad working conditions. The workers there have very little rights. They're exploited to the max. We all know that. You know, and it kind of goes to show where the mainstream business mind is at with the, you know, stocks and everything. Is like they're dumping a bunch of money into China to, you know, ride that economy, but the people there in China are really getting the short end of the stick, because the majority of people in China are pretty broke. They're facing near slave like conditions in the labor market and that kind of thing. And we all know that the government there is very heavy-handed with censorship and the way it treats its dissidents, and anyone that disagrees with them gets thrown in jail and gets thrown in labor camps. And, you know, in these labor camps, they make goods for Walmart and Kmart and shit like that. What do you think about, you know, this kind of reliance that the whole world is kind of placing on China to hold the financial system up? Does that kind of put us here in the U.S. and many people in Europe in a kind of a sticky situation when it comes to, you know, the reliance that we're putting on China for our own stocks and our own 401ks and all that stuff?
Well, one thing I want to say is I think that there's an overemphasis on how important China actually is to, you know, the overall world economy. I think that they have roughly 4 billion people, 1.4 billion people in China. And one thing that also needs to be noted is that their accounting standards are different than the United States and much of the world's in the way that they calculate their gross domestic product, their GDP. The largest instance of that, and I believe I've heard it or seen it shared on your page, is the Chinese ghost cities, Well, in China, to count towards GDP, you need to build a building. In the United States, for that building to count towards GDP, there needs to be a buyer for it. It needs to be sold. So if you build a house, it doesn't count towards the overall GDP until that house is sold and there's a buyer for it, and then that selling price is what's calculated into the GDP. The way that differs in China is they build the house and then it's counted. So the stories of Chinese ghost cities that have ran, all of that counts towards their GDP. So their government is buying up concrete, aluminum, steel, these hard resources, and building cities that have been reported on. I haven't seen them with my own eyes, but they've been reportedly, you know, empty for, and there's dozens of cities that are like this. So all of that's been counting towards their GDP, and it has posed the real question for a long time of when is the bubble going to burst? And this could be the beginning of that bubble bursting when you look at it from coming down, like you said before, 38% or 40% from the recent highs. But again, that recent high is from a 9-month doubling of their stock market, which is pretty unprecedented as well. So all of this is completely unprecedented. As far as the economy and, you know, the everyday person, I think that to most people, food stability and shelter stability and water stability is among the greatest things that affect us. Yeah, retiring with a high quality of life is important, but right here in California, people are, with money, are worrying about where we're going to get water from. For me, that's a larger question, and they don't, China does not impact our water supply in any way other than the fact that we probably export dairy and cattle to them. So I'm not taking
that. Can I ask you a question?
Go ahead.
Yeah, well, you said that you'd mentioned that China, that people overestimate the value that China's stock market has on our economy. And so you don't see this having... you don't see a collapse of the Chinese stock market having an extended effect on the global economy.
As far as GDP numbers and the economy go,
I think GDP is a relatively anemic measurement of health overall, but just in general,
profitability of the Dow Industrial, those top 30 companies, profitability of Apple is very much in jeopardy. But Apple employs only about 20 to 30,000 people here in the United States, mostly in retail and research and development, but their vast labor market is already in China. So if their profitability is hurt, their labor market, it stands to be in China that gets hurt the most. I think that China slowing down, absolutely, it hurts our biggest competitor, our biggest competitive companies that represent the Dow 30, the S&P 500, the NASDAQ. I don't think that as far as everyday, day-to-day operations go, China plays in as much as people want to say, and really we've only been allowed to directly invest in the stock market in China for less than a year now, so the profits that have come and the billions of dollars that have come off the table in just a matter of days, it's all billionaires and uber billionaires that are playing with this money. I don't think it affects the normal journalist, union worker. I don't think any of that matters. It could be even said that all of this is in retaliation for global trade wars that are going on.
I guess the reason I asked you that is because the advisor to the UK, a top UK advisor, went off on some tangent today, saying, you know, make sure you have water packed, take out hard cash, and it seemed to think that the global economy was melting down and got really everyone in a tizzy about it. And I don't know if he was reacting directly to the Chinese stock market or not, but our stock market was affected too. and it seems like it's affected global markets. So do you see any reason, you don't see any reason why a contingent of people would be saying that we're about to see a global economic collapse?
I absolutely understand that line of thought, and if I were in the top 10%, I would be much more concerned with the China effect than I am currently. A lot of people have been saying that the global economy never fully healed anyway, that Greece is in their third bailout, and they've been the canary in the coal mine the entire time, going through financial collapse after financial collapse, and it wasn't just Greece, right? It was the pigs countries, Portugal, Ireland, Iceland, Italy, Greece, and Spain were all going through their economic collapse. Germany has done well, but look at what Russia's done recently, and their currency, once the sanctions were imposed on them over the Ukraine, the oil collapse has definitely hurt the overall economic standing of a lot of major players. And the economy, as measured by GDP and stock market, it stands to lose a lot, and that's why I'd recommended stability to some of my clients in terms of California municipal bonds, which don't rely on the stock market, and California raising their taxes raised the credit ratings and lifted revenues. So the California municipal bond funds, they've done well over the last couple of days.
Stephen, you brought up a really interesting point a little earlier regarding, the ongoing trade wars that are going on regarding, I think, especially with the TPP and also the BRICS alliance, which is the Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa alliance, which is in many ways seen as an anti-dollar alliance and is seen as the next great threat to the petrodollar. And there has been plenty of speculation regarding that explosion in China, that it was some kind of retaliation. It happened very close to their big supercomputer that is the strongest computer in the world, and a lot of things like that. And then also there was these explosions in Japan at U.S. military bases that also seemed to come out of nowhere. I mean, the first thing that I thought was when the Chinese economy started really collapsing back, last month, and we covered it on the anti-media, actually, and talked about how some of the financial signs were pretty indicative of, pre-2008, housing bubble indications and things like that. But, I can't help but think that this crash in the Chinese market and also, as you mentioned, what happened with the ruble in Russia and the Russian economy and the Russian stock market and the Russian currency as well taking major blows. And then, of course, the oil prices dipping down below 40 also negatively affects Russia as well. I can't help but think that this is part of some kind of, industrial espionage to punish these players that are challenging the petrodollar. What do you think about that?
Well, I don't know about physical espionage. I don't know what the actual causes of the explosions are. The pictures are just terrible out of China, though, I was watching. As far as currency wars and trade wars go, I think that it's foolish to assume anything but ongoing, struggle for supremacy of currency is ongoing always. I think that the dollar could be threatened the way that China is trying to set up their Chinese World Bank in Asia as a direct response to what the president's trying to do with the Trans-Pacific Partnership negotiations. And as you already said earlier, the working conditions in all of these countries, the basic rule that both major players are playing by right now is treat labor as poorly as possible, and somehow that's going to result in greater economic and a better economy, greater economic gains. So that's why I stress that as far as food stability and water, we might have to to say in terms of that, but as far as if you're 100% relying on a 401k and heavily invested still in stocks at an old age, then there's plenty to be fearful for. You know, that's why there's tools out there like annuities, like bonds, you know, and just diversifying between a lot of different things. But some of the bond funds are even down over the last couple of days. The international bond funds, as currencies realign against themselves and as oil, you know, just keeps going down, which everyone says is such a, you know, scary thing because so much of our economy is based on such a small portion of oil profit. And another major portion of our economy is based on the pharmaceutical company. Something like 20 to 25% of our GDP comes from the pharmaceutical companies. So as soon as they start having a bad week, our GDP goes to crap. You know, and to me, that your stock market, your portfolio returns are...
You know, people need Prozac, so don't worry about that too much.
Yeah. The stock market is one thing. The health of the world is another. You know, and people have been talking about that for a lot longer than you or I have been alive.
Yeah, and you know, in many ways, you know, in many ways, the stock market is really a way of transferring wealth up, you know, upwards, I think, especially if you look back at the 2008 crisis and, you know, a bunch of people lost their houses because they got kind of fooled into buying these subprime mortgages and, you know, these kind of things. And you know, they were giving a bunch of unqualified people these huge loans. And I know personal people in my family and friends that were, you know, getting $500,000 houses and they only making 15, 20 bucks an hour at their jobs and things like that. And, you know, there's no way in hell they would actually be able to afford that, but they were still getting the loans. But then when shit hit the fan, you know, we all know what happened. The banks got the bailouts. AIG got the bailouts, and you know, the taxpayer, the average person that works and tries to buy a house on mortgage and that kind of thing, kind of got screwed. My final question to you, Stephen, is regarding the QE, and also because you know China is basically doing the very similar tactics by, you know, pumping a bunch of money into their markets and easing borrowing, you know, restrictions and that kind of thing. What does the QE, you know, quantitative easing, for people that aren't familiar with it, it's where the Federal Reserve basically was kind of pumping money into the markets to ease tensions and make sure there was plenty of liquidity and make sure the banks were willing to lend out money and that kind of thing. Do you think that this will have an effect, you know, if we do see this turn into more than a correction, which, you know, we're not sure of. We're going to have to find out tomorrow what happens here in the U.S. markets. Judging by the other Asian markets, they're starting to rebound, so it may just be a correction. But, you know, many people have been saying that the Federal Reserve has kind of used up most of its tools already and that it's kind of out of, you know, tricks to pull out of its pocket if this does turn into more than just a correction and does start turning into something that we saw in 2008. How does that play with not only in China, but here in the U.S.?
Yeah, Nick, that's a great question. Let me do my best to answer that. In terms of tomorrow's market, the futures are already indicating a triple-digit start to the positive right now, as alluded to in the Asian market. So it could be a good day. But as we talked about, the volatility index, the VIX, has skyrocketed. So we're going to see for the next several days, most likely, large point swings one direction or another. We've lost 1,200 points in a matter of three trading days. So, you know, 300-400 up day tomorrow wouldn't be that big of a surprise. In terms of quantitative easing, QE, there's really two types of quantitative easing that happened. One is more debt being added on, more borrowing going on in the terms of the Fed buying bonds and debt and the United States government using that debt to do whatever the United States government is doing with their budget. The other form of quantitative easing that was going on is it was really refinancing short-term debt into long-term debt, which is not necessarily a bad thing. It was two-year debt that can now be paid back over 30 years with the option of paying it off sooner if we somehow make a whole lot of money. In talking about the debt and deficit, it's important to know the size of the United States income and GDP. We were just talking about GDP, and I don't like weighting too heavily GDP, but if we're talking debt and deficit, it's one of the most comparative sources. It's kind of like our $18 trillion debt on our $3 trillion taxable income is kind of like having $180,000 outstanding on a $30,000 a year income, which if we have a mortgage and we bought an asset with that $180,000 isn't necessarily a bad thing, especially if that's financed over 30 years at 1 to 2%. The problem is if we spent that $180,000 and bought a whole bunch of liabilities that we're going to continue to pay for, like in the terms of unfunded wars, which now have veterans coming back with, you know, costs associated, and we didn't buy a lot of infrastructure or assets with that $180,000 in UNI terms or $18 trillion in United States terms. We bought liabilities in a lot of ways, so that debt deficit could continue to grow, especially if there's continued to be deadlock in Congress, which appears to be what's going to continue to happen. And no one ever talked about the possibility of selling assets, right? We own assets throughout the world and land and different things that we could potentially sell if we had to make debt payments. But the quantitative easing, I think overall, has helped stabilize the economy. And like I said, a lot of it was refinancing short-term debt into long-term debt and borrowing at low rates to fund what needed to be funded, which we didn't really have another option to do. So,
Stephen, thank you for calling in, man. I really appreciate the insight, and we'd like to have you back on sooner rather than later to continue talking about this stuff, especially when the next big update comes with the stock markets and or if this. You know, if this volatility continues, if you're still, you know, doing consulting and things like that, feel free to plug yourself real quick if you'd like.
You know, just like you are trying to be journalist in San Diego, our Facebook page is the San Diego Changers, and we've been at a couple different events and human rights and people over profit, AOTAS and APA and immigration and, you know, everything that's going on. The water crisis is the one that I was working on before Ferguson broke out, but since then we've been in the streets saying Black Lives Matter and trying to do a lot of different things, but still keeping an eye on the stock market now and then too.
Awesome, man. Well, thanks for calling in. We'll have you back soon.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, that was a interesting call, man. I mean, he seemed to know a lot about what's going on here. I think DB is joining us now on the call. How are you doing, DB?
I'm doing good, Nick. Just kind of watching in abject horror as everyone's life savings gets flushed down the toilet like usual.
Yep. I mean, it's a crazy system, man. And you know, that's the thing, dude, is that, you know, when this stuff does crash, it's the average guy that's holding a 401k that gets the short end of the stick. You know, you don't, your 401k doesn't get the bailout. You know what I mean?
Well, look, so that last guy, I mean, did you listen to the last guy, DB? Steven?
I mean, yeah, I tuned into him and,
Didn't he make you feel better about
your
life and everything?
No, not at all. No, I mean, we're better off.
You don't feel good right now?
I feel all right, man, because, listen, we live in a country that's taken all the material goods of the world by force for a long time, and it's all accumulated here. And when shit actually does drop, we're going to be in a better position than 90% of the world, that's for sure. But look, man, we have 330 million people that don't grow food, that are armed, that are completely brainwashed and chemically addled, it's going to be neighbor versus neighbor, and there's going to have to be grouping up of people that are awake, and we're going to have to get somewhere safe, or else we're going to get flushed down the toilet with everyone else.
Well, I'm going to come to Minnesota. I'm telling you, I'm coming to see you.
Hey, man, all I can say is this, and not to be a fearmonger, but the coast will get hit first.
Well, you are a fearmonger. I'm terrified, and I'm literally booking my flight to Minnesota right now. What's your address, by the way? Can you say it on air for everyone?
Nah, man, because I'll have a hit squad on me in no time.
We have a – all right, first of all, I just want to say I had to drop a couple calls because a few people called in. I think someone from 927 or 972 area code, and their mic was not muted, and I was getting some feedback. If you do call in, we are taking calls, but make sure your mic is muted. And once you get on the show, make sure you turn your radio off so that we don't hear ourselves talking in the background. A little distracting, and the people listening on the internet can't really hear it too well. We have another caller on the line with some expertise with the stock market by the name of James Job. He's a journalist with the Fifth Column, which is one of our friendly sites that we work with fairly often. And he's covered the S&P 500 in the past pretty extensively. How are you doing, James?
I'm all right. Thank you for having me, and good evening. At all.
So, you know, I wanted to get your take because Stephen gave us his insight on how he feels about this situation with the stock market. I wanted to get another, you know, opinion on this. And what do you think is going on right now with this volatility in the stock market?
Quite honestly, and this is where it was covered and why I hit you up earlier. About being on the show.
I think we're getting a little bit of wind, a little bit of wind noise from your phone there.
Is that better?
Yeah, we're better now. Go ahead.
Okay, good. So I covered this a little bit earlier on this year, actually, in the first quarter of the year. The Standard & Poor's 500 took a really steep dive, a 1.3% dive in all of its, you know, 500 companies, I hadn't been watching the stock market my whole life. I've just kind of been awakened, and then I noticed in watching the stock market for about a year and watching specific stocks, actually with medical marijuana related stocks and things of that nature, kind of adjusting to how the business insiders do these things, do their trading, and work to make it happen. I almost thought about even investing myself. With that being said, that's what I was doing for about a year. I was watching the stock market and specific stocks, and not just specific stocks, but all the stocks in general, because you really can't do so. You can't watch a specific stock without getting the rest of it. And the earlier this year in the first quarter, at the very first end of the first quarter of the year on April 2nd, Standard & Poor's took a nosedive. And when it did so, there was a lot of whistleblowers that came out of the woodwork saying, look, here's some graphs and charts and things of this nature that show you the reality and the perspective of how this happens every single time. And so if you start looking into the history of these things, where in 2008, and, you know, here we have this same sort of worldwide drop in people's investments, we get this fluctuation that happens. And that's where I actually kind of want to digress this story. Because this happens. It happens quite often, and that's the way that the economy is set to work. That's the way this capitalist economy is set to run. I've watched the news all day long, and every single news outlet, and your conservative one will say, you know, sell all your stocks right now. And your liberal one will say, buy some stocks right now. And that's the way that this is this is tuning. This is exactly what it's meant to happen. It's set up so that it happens at specific intervals during and before tax seasons. And when I set up an article that actually only has like 40 Facebook shares from earlier this year, it was regarding the Standard & Poor 500 decline. And now we see where there were a lot of whistleblowers and a lot of analysts and a lot of people that were watching the stock market, like myself for a year, that seems one thing go down and a big spike like we see in all of our charts that everybody goes off of. And we started to see the exact same thing that happens here in America with our own socioeconomical decline. So all of our major declines in the stock market that had a major effect and impact on our capitalist economy happen in the same genre. They happen in the same way. They go up and up and spike and spike and up and spike and spike and up and then burst and come down. And they have to in order to generate more buyers that have capitalist gains at this time. Not just that, but the generations have to continue to invest. And that's where I wanted to bring this conversation. The generations behind the baby boomers right now need to invest in NASDAQ, in Dow Jones Industrial, in Chinese profits, in Australian currencies, in all kinds of different places, because they are not seeing that, because there's a quite honestly, a giant fluctuation and an increase in activists who think that Wall Street is a big scheme. And where they're losing their profits, they need to make gains. So what they do is they bring the stock market down to bring investors in.
Don't you think maybe Wall Street has lost the faith of the investor? I mean, perhaps, you know, there's a sense in which the onus is perhaps on the major companies at this point to give us a reason to invest.
Yeah, man, so I think...
Go ahead.
Go ahead, man.
No, go ahead.
Hello?
Caller from 919, we'll get to you in a minute. First, we're listening to James. He's talking about the S&P 500. Go ahead, James.
Okay, so where we have a spike in the S&P 500, if you go to Bloomberg right now, if you go to places like these, you know, your typical stock analysis places, you're seeing articles where S&P spiked, but... or its futures are at astronomical levels right now because they're expecting a huge increase in investors tomorrow, where everybody's heard, oh, okay, the stock market crashed. If you don't have stocks right now, get in now, because that's the way it works. You buy when things get low, and then you expect those things to continue in a 5 or 10 year span to get higher. That's how the stock market works. That's how all of this works, because of inflation and socioeconomics. Now,
you mean we want to buy in low and then win high. I get it.
Completely choreographed before tax season to have happened to the economy, and actually to the global economy. Not conspiracy theorists and like bad, but like, this is not something that is this is a behind-the-scenes drop to gain investors from a lower status. If you listen to NPR at all, and I know that most people don't, where in my news outlets, the majority of the people that follow me, they really don't actually listen to liberal news like that. And I do, because I like to get their stupid suspect actualities they want the populace to focus on. And what they're trying to do, I'm going to tell you right now, is they're trying to drop investing costs to gain investors and keep their Ponzi scheme working.
That's a really interesting perspective, man, and I really don't doubt it because this stuff isn't conspiracy theory anymore. I mean, what a recent huge scandal recently that just got prosecuted was the LIBOR scandal, which was where they found out that a bunch of these banking conglomerates were rigging the currency markets to gain money for themselves. To think that, you know, this is some kind of orchestrated fiasco that is going on in order to, like you said, trick the lower realms of society, the working class or the younger generations into buying into the market because they think, oh, if I buy in now it's really low, well, I'm going to make a bunch of money. I wouldn't doubt that because it seems to me like, you know, a lot of the economics are orchestrated and heavily controlled by a small number of men that basically control all the resources. And the other thing is that, you know, this could be a profit-taking situation. I saw someone commenting on one of my posts earlier about how the drop in the stock market in China was, you know, made for a lot of these Western investors to be able to go in and pick up a bunch of shares in these companies for pennies on the dollar and things like that. And man, it's a really interesting prospect, and I really don't doubt it. Go ahead, DB.
I was just going to say, Nick, this whole correction going on, you can sum it up in one phrase, and it's a well-known phrase. Gold is the money of kings, silver is the money of gentlemen, barter is the money of peasants, but debt is the money of slaves. This is what's going on right now.
Yeah, and debt is rampant everywhere. I mean, Greece is the perfect example, and that kind of is, you know, it has a lot of people interested in the economic side of things right now because, as James was saying, you know, for the most part, people our age, outside of maybe us and a few other millennials out there that actually follow this markets and, you know, are concerned with economics and stuff, it's a really boring topic, and for the most part, millennials don't want to deal with that kind of shit, you know, the stock markets and all that stuff. But Greece got people interested because it became some kind of social phenomenon, that kind of thing.
Which one is it?
Now we're starting to see it unfold, and, you know, that's kind of a, you know, it's a really interesting theory. James, is there anything else you want to add before I take some of these callers?
You know what? I kind of do want to put a little bit of points that you just made there a little further into perspective, wherein with Greece we have a situation where we have a populist uprising and they're noticing other countries and through social media because we're not getting a whole lot of, you know, we get some news coverage on it, but we don't get the whole picture. And so we do it on our own, right? We send our own activists in to film for us. And we get our own perspectives on it. And that's wherein lies this issue. We have a candidacy coming up, a presidential and senatorial and, you know, congressional electorate coming into play. And there are many, many of those that are trying to appeal to younger people and the younger populaces. And with regard to how the system works, if you think about things in this perspective, how many radio ads do you hear right now that ask you to come in and refinance your home for less than, you know, way less than last year because you can do it for less than last year and get a squeeze of $5,000 little deal out of it? Now, what that does is that feeds the bank's interest money. It feeds every single conglomerate that goes up the chain in these huge corporations that actually have points on the NASDAQ and on the Dow Jones Industrial and on the S&P. That's where these things happen and take place. It is from the small and minuscule level where we have to eat what we're told in order to continue to feed the pig. And you hear a lot of things like Bernie Sanders saying, I want to bring in refinancing student loans. And you hear a lot of things like Hillary Clinton saying, I want to refinance student loans. And you hear a lot of these things that sound great to the populace. Now, what you have to look to is behind the scenes where they're talking about, oh, interest rates are low, let's refinance your loans. Not let's forgive them. Not let's make our complete education system better by funding with our tax dollars people getting educated. It's to your loans so that the banks have to deal with it and still get to dip.
Right.
And that's...
Yeah, that's a great point, man. You know, there's a rising, we've covered it on the anti-media, there's a rising movement of people in college just saying, you know what, screw it, I'm not even going to pay back these loans. And so they have these populist candidates, like, for instance, Bernie Sanders, that he, you know, and nothing horribly against him, but yeah, he can inspire young people to go and rejoin the economic system and, you know, refinance their loans, and then they'll pay it back if they get lower interest rates. But you know, the problem is that there is a rising movement of people just saying, you know what, screw it, we're not going to pay this shit back at all. You know, we're going to stick it to the man. We're going to screw the system over. And, you got Bernie Sanders out there corralling the millennials back in and getting them back, you know, in an underhanded way too, getting them back into the banking system by claiming that he's going to regulate it and fix it and this, that, and the other. When, you know, people are ready to just get rid of that system altogether, especially the millennial generation, people younger than that. Very interesting angle you got there. James, thank you for calling in, man. We'll have you back on the show pretty soon here and talk about some of your other topics that you cover as well, because you write some pretty interesting articles over at the Fifth Column. Thanks for calling in, man, and we'll talk to you soon. I got a couple callers I want to get to now. The caller from 928 has been on the line for a while. You can unmute your mic now. We're coming to you, 928. How are you doing tonight? Did you want to add to this discussion, or do you want to change the topic here? What do you want to talk about?
I'm going to add on to it. Was that James that was talking just then?
That was James.
Hello?
James was just talking right now.
Yeah, that's what I was asking. He kind of hit some points I was going to hit at, but I was going to go into another direction. Could fear... If you could scare somebody, because I'm from the, like, you know, the new millennials, I was born in the 80s, okay?
Uh-huh.
And so I'm in my 30s, and, you know, and I want to think about this. Couldn't you make money off of fear?
Oh, of course. Fear sells, that's for sure.
This is the reason why I asked. We're dealing with a lot of Bernie Madoffs, you know? You know, Madoff got caught stealing all those people's money. What if we're dealing with a lot of Madoffs who are doing this right now? Like he was talking about, who got caught up with stealing money, Ponzi schemes, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Could you think about this, that's what they foretold, that's what we're dealing with? If we could scare the new millennials from investing, you make, you know, the APR percentage go down, so that makes other people look good, so they could buy. So other, you know, the 1%ers who do have the wealth can invest. Because it's just not just all that. But, you know, I look at it in another realm of, even though we as people don't look at things, we need to look at the tactics they use. If I could scare you from taking your money and investing, that's helping somebody else. Because remember, not only people are making money when stocks rise, other people are making money when stocks drop. If the stock market crashes, somebody's making money off of it.
Exactly. The perfect example is with Goldman Sachs. They actually, during the height of the financial crisis leading up to it, 2006, 2007, they were selling a bunch of these subprime mortgage packages to a bunch of investors, while at the same time, they were betting against these same exact loan packages that they were selling to people. And, you know, they were hedging their bets via insurance, which was coincidentally, quote unquote, being backed up by AIG, which notoriously took a huge bailout in the 2008 financial crisis. So Goldman Sachs was selling all these subprime mortgages to people that held 401ks and these big, you know, investment funds and that kind of thing, while at the same time they're hedging their bets, getting insurance from AIG that these things were going to fail. And that's where they made their money. So Goldman Sachs came out the other end you know, when the entire system goes down, Goldman Sachs came out basically unscathed. And I was just reading about this the other day, and you make a great point there. As soon as, you know, whenever the stocks, yeah, the people make money when the stocks go up, and yeah, your 401k grows and it looks better and that this, that, and the other. But when it crashes, these guys are also making bets that it's going to crash as well, and they're selling their customers. Two different groups of customers are selling the low-level people, the people holding 401ks, they're selling them a bunch of subprime mortgages. Well, at the same time, they're selling a bunch of these rich people, and then their own company is betting against, you know, the subprime mortgages, and then they make money from it crashing. So that's a great point.
Okay, now let me what I'm saying is, I'm not no conglomerate, bigwig, nothing. I learned all this because I went to college, and, you know, you learn macro and microeconomics. And my economics teacher said, always know this. Before we get started, for the semester start, he said in his lecture is, always know this. Everybody's making money. I don't care if the stocks are at the highest point in the year or we're about to, as they call it, you know, back in 1929 when the stock market crashed. Somebody's making money. Always know that. Even though all the humanity is, always know somebody's making money in the back of the scene. Always trust and know money is being made and money is being gained. Never lost. Even though stocks are dropping, money is being made. And the reason why I said that, I think some of us I'm not saying you need to go get a doctorate in it or whatever. Some of us need to take a few classes and learn to get an understanding and wake up of learning some things which you look up at the stock market, because sometimes, I ain't gonna lie, we have these $300-$500 phones. And instead of taking selfies every day, why don't we take those phones and do some looking around, you know, do some research, like, you know, look in the stocks. Always know, even though you might see a lot of minus signs, look at the other side, like James said, somebody else's gain. So, you know, as people, we got to awaken up and look at it. Somebody's gaining from it. The number one commodity of this country is people. Not crops, not buildings, not material. We're the number one commodity, whether it's prison systems, work, anything. When you go to a job, it's just like the stock market. You know what I'm saying? When you got a lot of people in that job and they're sitting over there selling a product, your productivity is going up like the stocks. When you can't sell that product, your productivity goes down. You have to get rid of people, okay? So you got to look at it in a pure common sense term that somebody's out there making money while things are looking bleak. You got to learn to, hey, if I'm going to invest in this, watch what you invest. Because right now we got a lot of old people, you know, old and elderly people who are out in the streets. And people in that old, while they keep us busy with the Kardashians and all that garbage, I don't look at stuff like that. I'm looking at my neighbor being out on the streets. And you got to say, how can I help my neighbor as well as myself to keep us from being on the streets? You know,
that's a great point. And I really appreciate the call. And I think you bring up some really great things. And we talk about this on the show relatively often, is about, you know, looking at our own communities and building our own networks up that way so that we're not getting impacted by the Chinese stock market as much, you know, when it goes and it crashes. And also on the research front, I mean, you couldn't be more right on that, because I think the power of having these smartphones and this decentralized access to this information is what really will bring, you know, decentralize the wealth to the people and bring down these huge conglomerate banking operations and all that stuff. Caller from 928, we're going to have to move on to the next call because we got a couple other things we got to cover here tonight. We really appreciate the call, and feel free to call back on Wednesday when we have our show, same place, same time.
Don't worry about it. Candidate D's nuts will fix it.
Yeah, we're going to get into that soon. Once I get past this next caller here, we're going to go to the caller from 919. Thank you for being patient with us, and thanks for calling in. What do you want to talk about?
Appreciate it. I just wanted to say you can forget about the stock markets, and you can forget about Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton and you can forget about the economic system and all of that stuff. You can forget about these nuts. I just want to talk about barrel rolls. Can anybody here do a barrel roll?
A barrel roll? Yeah, I can do barrel roll, man. I'm a bodyboarder. I've landed a few barrel rolls in my lifetime. Hey, man, thanks for calling in. We needed a little bit of levity to the show here. Is there anything serious you want to talk about? Or
these nuts can barrel roll.
I'm actually doing a barrel roll right now.
Awesome, man. Well, hey, thanks for calling in. We really appreciate the call. Now we got to get over to Jake. Because we got this candidate named D's Nuts. He's running as an independent, and he's gaining major, major steam in the political realm. And, you know, he got up to 9%, which is basically, you know, more popular than 10 of the Republican candidates without any media coverage. And now recently we've had this crazy media frenzy going on about D's Nuts. But, Jake, I mean, a lot of people take this as a joke, and in a way it is a joke, but I really think that this candidate has major implications on the system. In fact, I'd go as far as saying that D's Nuts may be the most influential candidate that we've seen in several decades. What do you think about this, Jake?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I just wrote an article about it. I spent all day bemusing the point. I don't think that's an actual grammatical word there, but whatever. By the way, did that guy just sit on hold waiting for like an hour just to talk about body rolling?
Barrel rolling, yeah.
Oh, okay, barrel rolling. All right,
all right. You got to be quick. Anyway, we got 3 minutes left.
All right, well, yeah, I mean, D's Nuts, it is important. It goes beyond just a satirical candidate. We've had satirical candidates before. We've had sham candidates before. The difference here, the importance here is that this is it's becoming somewhat of a movement now. He's polling at 9%, and actually public policy polling just announced on Friday that he's going to be included in the next national poll. So he's going to start nationally polling now. Now, if this is a candidacy that is directly targeted at exposing the sham, the real sham, which is the two-party system, now you start getting some major national poll numbers of people. And this thing has gone viral. I mean, everyone knows what this is now. But it's a decentralized movement, and the movement is really pushing towards, I'm not entirely sure what it's pushing towards, but it's eviscerating the two-party system, and it's making a mockery of our electoral system. And if anyone doesn't think that it has power, I would challenge you to consider what politics is going to be like in the next 10, 20 years with social media as a major social force. What exactly what are we capable of here with social media? What are we capable of here with viral memes? What can we really do to affect change on the electoral system by the sheer weight of a satirical meme that becomes so viral that candidates have to talk about it? Candidates are gonna if D's Nuts is polling at a national level, the candidates will be asked about it at the debates. They will be forced to talk about it. And if this keeps going on into the next election, which I suspect will, you're talking about a huge mobilized force of people across the spectrum. You're talking about anarchists. You're talking about agorists, you're talking about
socialist, you know, libertarians, all these guys.
Socialist, libertarian, a huge. It goes across a huge platform. It's a catalyzing factor that I don't think we've ever seen before. Seriously, in terms of the sheer power it has as a meme.
Jake, go
ahead.
Sorry to interrupt, man, but what it represents is this is a generational divide du jour. You're looking at people underneath 35, 40, you know, I'm probably on the upper end of the spectrum, but we don't give a shit anymore because the system's too fucked to save.
Right.
Awesome. Analysis. Everyone, look out for the article tomorrow. We're coming to the end of the show here. We're having a great analysis on D's Nuts tomorrow. I'm voting D's Nuts most likely, unless he drops out, drops, whatever. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. Catch us Wednesday. Also, catch us tomorrow, 5 days a week, different hosts. We'll be back Wednesday here. Anti-Show. I'm going to let them know through the stereo. Yo, here we go. Go through the stereo.